This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to talk about when workers can expect relief. Bills are due very soon. We're talking about credit card bills, phone bills, electricity bills. People need relief right now. So why is this taking so long? Joining us to talk about the federal relief package and what is happening at the local and state levels are two guests. Stephen Greenhouse was a New York Times reporter for 31 years. He spent nearly two decades covering labor and the workplace. His latest book is Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Rose. Sorry about it being such a difficult time.
Oh, I know. Well, thank you for all the work that you're doing and just trying to get the word out to people. We're also joined by Adam Briones, Director of Economic Equity at the Greenlining Institute. They advance economic opportunity and empowerment for people of color. Hi, Adam. Thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Rose. Thank you for having me on.
Well, great to have you. Stephen, I want to start off with you. This is a very basic question. I was just looking at the calendar, and April 1st is right around the corner. It's next Wednesday. Now, my credit card bill is due, my phone bill, my electricity bill, my garbage bill, and this applies to people all across this country. Why is it taking so long for relief to arrive? I mean, at the federal level, they haven't even decided on what kind of relief that will be.
Well, apparently, depending, you know, Mitch McConnell says we're five yards from the goal line. Chuck Schumer says we're 2 yards from the goal line. Finally, they're making progress. I mean, it is a humongously complicated thing to try to figure out how to save this, you know, $20 trillion economy. And we'll probably have more people laid off this coming week than any week in American history, maybe 3 million people. And it probably wasn't helpful for Mitch McConnell and the Senate to take off 3 days last weekend. And, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans in the Senate haven't agreed on what the ideal package is. But there is a sense of urgency, Rose. And hopefully in the next 2-3 days, a package will be approved that will provide lots of unemployment insurance, you know, $1,200, you know, to every worker, $500 per kid. And I hear this talk of even provides some money to, you know, gig workers and independent contractors, you know, whose jobs are disappearing.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a hugely complicated mess. It, you know, there's a lot of pain out there. A lot of different industries need help. A lot of workers in many different industries and types of work need help. So it's, you know, it's hard to craft a one size fits all package that will help the nation's 150 million workers and God knows how many industries.
Stephen, what are you hearing about a timeline? Because we had McClatchy's economics reporter, Kevin Hall, on last week on Friday, and he said, let's say they come up with an agreement today, the likelihood of people getting their relief checks very soon, well, he said it might take 2 weeks. The other question is, how do you get it into people's bank accounts if banks are closing and if people don't use online banking? So there's a lot of questions about how the money will actually be distributed.
Kevin's very smart. I worked with him 40 years ago. That's a great question. I mean, usually it takes a week or two to get out unemployment insurance checks. And now they say these $1,200 checks, they're also going to try to get out within 2 weeks. You know, hopefully this can be done electronically. You know, it'll be hard for people to walk to the unemployment insurance now offices now. So that's all complicated. It has to be done increasingly by computer and by phone. But, you know, the good news is there's a sense of urgency. The bad news is we have a federal government, you know, a Trump administration, which, as many of us know, doesn't have its act together in 800 different ways. And one end doesn't know what the other end is doing. But, you know, I think a lot of folks in Congress really want something done. They see the urgency. A lot of governors, you know, in California, in Ohio, in Illinois, here in New York, you know, really are doing very well on this. And I think they'll try their best to make sure the unemployment insurance gets out quickly to workers. And one of the good pieces evidently coming out of this new federal bill is that unemployment insurance, instead of being 50% of regular pay, will be 100% of regular pay for 4 months. So that's great. That, if I understand correctly, you know, will hold a lot of people whole, will enable them to pay their rent, will enable them to buy food. But it's still going to be a very difficult few months ahead.
Adam, at the Greenlining Institute, you have all put out a report talking about what needs to be in this relief package, especially for people on the margins, the most vulnerable workers. What are your thoughts about what you are calling for and what you are hearing from reports about what is in the bill?
Sure. I think from a high level, I think there are certainly things we like. We definitely are supportive of the direct cash payments as well as the set-asides for small business in the medical field. But I think that if you look back at history, and especially the last economic crisis, you know, it's really communities of color that suffer first and they suffer the most. And so we really want to make sure that what's being proposed is of a size and scale that's actually going to put off some of the economic pain that we saw so clearly in the last economic crisis. And we also really feel like whatever is put out needs to focus on the people that make our economy and our society function. So it has to focus on the workers, on small business, on homeowners and renters, on students and nonprofits, and not just very large corporations.
Also, Adam, vulnerable workers are going to have a very hard time paying their bills, because we've seen so many studies over the years just showing that so many people do not have much savings. They couldn't come up with $400 to pay their bill. But we're also now talking about, you know, people in the, you know, it's hard to even say what the middle is anymore, but hairdressers, for example, construction workers, grocery store workers. I mean, a lot of people, although they are on the front lines, but a lot of people are also losing their jobs in that sector. So you've got people at many different levels of the workforce that are going to be hit hard and need relief as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And that's why we also think that whatever economic package is passed, this cash transfer to workers and families can't just be a one-time occurrence.
Right.
We really feel like it needs to last at minimum 6 months, but ideally somewhere closer to 12 months, because as you just mentioned, you know, families are going to really be hurting in this situation, and it's not going to end with the turn of a light switch. This is something that we'll likely be dealing with for a year to 18 months to probably 2 to 3 years at minimum.
Right. And I should say I meant restaurant workers, because grocery store workers, thank you if you're listening, they're all on the front lines right now. But every single restaurant in my neighborhood is shut down. The little deli, all of the stores. And you've got artists that are affected by this, dancers, musicians, lighting directors. I mean, people at all sectors of the economy. Stephen, so, you know, you've covered labor for the New York Times for 2 decades. What are your thoughts on this? Because this is affecting people at all levels.
Sure. Yeah, Adam's absolutely right. You know, low-income workers, workers of color will be hit hardest. And many of them, you know, if they are laid off for a week or two or three, will already face problems, you know, paying their rent. Fortunately, you know, there's been a lot of pressure on banks, a lot of pressures on realtors. You know, some governors are saying, please don't do any foreclosures over the next month or two or three. So hopefully no one is going to be evicted. And there's talk of, you know, the $1,200 is good. Adam's totally right. We got to do it more than just once, because, you know, these artists, these restaurant workers, these gig, you know, these Uber drivers who used to have 30 rides a day, maybe are down to 5 rides a day, you know, they're not able to make ends meet. And, you know, $1,200 payment is nice, but it's not enough to really support a family, you know, for months at a time. And one good piece of news I read, if I understood correctly, is that, you know, some of the lower income families are not going to get a full $1,200. They're going to get only a fraction of that. But I believe the Democrats pushed to make sure that, you know, low income workers and their families would receive the full $1,200 plus $500 per child. And, you know, going forward, figuring out what to do for, you know, independent contractors, for artists, for you know, chip workers who generally make only, you know, a relatively low base wage and might not get much in the way of unemployment insurance. You know, we have to, like, step back and figure out ways to help these workers and independent contractors who are hardest hit. And I think one of the big problems we faced compared to Europe was that when the Republicans were drafting their package, they were focused so much on bailing out the corporations and not enough on, you know, saving workers and maintaining employment. And, you know, and I've written that, you know, in Europe, several countries, Denmark, the Netherlands, and even the conservative government of Britain have first and foremost focused on maintaining employment, getting companies not to lay off people. And they'd say to companies, you know, in the Netherlands, we'll pay 90% of your workers' wages if you don't pay them, if you don't lay them off. Even Boris Johnson's government in the UK, you know, has a plan that, you know, British companies don't, you know, we'll pay 80% of your workers' wages, don't lay them off. And that's great because it helps, you know, prevent the recession from falling and helps keep workers attached to their companies. If, you know, once this horrible crisis is over, it will make it easier for companies and workers to rebound when these workers are still attached to their companies. One of the big problems with our moving so slowly in the U.S., as you note, Rose, is that tons of workers are getting laid off. They're becoming unattached to their companies, and that will make it harder for them and their companies and production and productivity and the economy to rebound once the worst of this crisis is over.
It was incredible to read about what other countries are doing, Stephen. I mean, you tweeted this piece from the New York Times, COVID-19's economic pain is universal, but relief? Well, it depends on where you live. And as you said, an out-of-work waitress in Amsterdam can count on the government to cover 90% of her wages. Cafe owners in Brussels receive about $4,300 to make up for lost revenue. And then, as you said, in the UK, it looks like the proposal would allow any employer to apply for grants to cover 80% of worker wages up to £2,500 a month. That's about $2,900, backdated through March 1st. Stephen, could we ever see any policy like this in the United States?
I would imagine, yes. I mean, we have kind of crept towards that through the back door by saying we're going to, instead of having regular unemployment insurance at 50%, we're going to have it at 100%. And that's nice, but you only get that once you've been laid off and you, it's kind of too late. You know, the horses have escaped from the barn, from the stable, because the workers have already been laid off. It would have been good if we announced this, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and that would have perhaps deterred a lot of companies from laying off their workers. There's this, you know, very good line in the New York Times story saying, you know, the philosophy in Denmark is better to pay companies to keep people employed than to pay for the disruption caused by mass layoffs and unemployment. And here in the United States, we're kind of going at it as backwards. We've done very little to dissuade companies from laying off people, and we're going to try to really help the workers once they've been laid off. And in Denmark, in the Netherlands, in Britain, they're really trying very hard to keep the economy intact by, you know, discouraging companies from laying off their workers.
Adam, it is pretty striking when you look at the differences between the United States and how other countries are dealing with this.
Absolutely, it is.
What are your thoughts? I mean, what would it take for the United States to embrace some of these policies?
Well, I think to Stephen's point, we need to stop thinking about just what is the dollar value today of the stimulus, and we really need to think about what is the stimulus saving us from. So, for instance, in the 2008 financial crisis, I've read studies that said that the long-term impact has cost every family in America about $75,000 because of the crash. So we really need to be thinking about what over the next decade is going to be the cost to our families and our small businesses, you know, that this crisis is going to cause, and how much do we need to put in now to head that off. So, for instance, when we talk about supporting families, I think we need to be a lot closer to $2,000 per family plus $1,000 per child. I think we need to be talking about pausing all mortgage payments and supporting homeowners, and not just mortgage payments, but all payments that are impacting workers, so small business loans, car payments, student payments. I think we need to also talk about stopping evictions. We should really be talking about just forgiving student debt at this point. There's about $1.7 trillion in outstanding student debt, and I've read studies that say if that was forgiven, we'd be adding about $100 billion annually to the economy. And then lastly, I really want to make sure that we don't forget about small community-based nonprofits that are on the front lines, supporting the homeless, supporting seniors, supporting the sick and elderly in their homes, because right now no one is really talking about them, and I think we also need a targeted stimulus package for those small nonprofits as well.
No, this is such a great point. I mean, these are the nonprofits that are doing the frontline work out on the streets, trying to reach people, especially people, our unhoused neighbors. What are things like at the Greenlining Institute? What are your thoughts about how you all are going to fare over the next couple of months?
So, So I would say that thankfully Greenlining is an organization that's about 30 years old. We have a staff of about 40 folks. So we'll be okay. We're going to make it through okay. I think we're in for a few tough years, as all nonprofits are. But who I'm really concerned about are these small grassroots nonprofits, the neighborhood folks that are really the first places that new immigrants, low-income workers, folks that are reentering society from prison, those are the nonprofits that they go to first. Those are the real frontline folks. And even in the best of times, they're barely hanging on and operating on a shoestring. And so I think that the economic impact of what's going on from canceled fundraisers, canceled events, it's going to have such a huge impact on them. And I really hope that at a federal and state level, we can make sure that we're mitigating the pain for those community-based nonprofits.
Yeah, we will definitely do a show about that. That is Adam Briones, Director of Economic Equity at the Greenlining Institute. They work to advance economic opportunity and empowerment for people of color. Stephen Greenhouse was a New York Times reporter for 31 years. He spent two decades covering labor. His latest book is Beaten Down, Worked Up: The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Stephen, we've been talking about what is happening here in California, where you can apply for financial relief if you're unemployed, if you're a small business. What are your thoughts about how state and local governments are tackling this?
I was joking with, people saying it would have been great if Donald Trump had named Andrew Cuomo to be the coronavirus czar. I'm not usually a big fan of Cuomo, but he's done an amazingly good job on handling the coronavirus. I think Mike DeWine, Republican of Ohio, has really done a good job. I think Gavin Newsom, there in California has been on top of things. And, they've been ahead of the curve, far ahead of President Trump, in trying to, get people to self-isolate and really, telling the truth and accepting what science is telling them and not lying, not distorting what's happening. I just want to go. One thing that really bothers me about what's happened is, yes, California has a paid sick days law. Yes, New York has a paid sick days law. But 42 states in the nation do not have paid sick days laws. And it's been crazy that we have this horrendous, scary pandemic and tens of millions of American workers do not have paid sick days at work. And this very much hurts the lowest paid workers of color the most. The bottom 10% by income, 50% of those workers do not receive paid sick days. So too often workers face the choice of, especially if you face this terrible scourge of coronavirus, do I stay home from work and miss 3 or 5 or 7 days of work and not be able to feed my family? Or do I go into work and maybe infect my coworkers or infect customers? And many part-time workers at Amazon and Walmart have complained in recent weeks that they don't get paid sick days. Finally, after a lot of pressure and a lot of embarrassment, Amazon agreed to provide paid time off, paid sick leave to its part-time workers yesterday. But one of the big themes of my book is that America unfortunately treats its workers far worse than other industrial nations. And we are just one of two, wealthy nations in the world that don't provide paid sick days to their workers. And I think a lot of the elite doesn't care that low paid workers don't get paid sick days. But when there's a horrible contagion like this, I think finally the elite worries, wow, if I go to Whole Foods, if I go to Trader Joe's and the cashier doesn't get paid sick days, maybe I'll catch something from them. So finally, the elite is realizing maybe, it's kind of screwed up that, millions of workers in the United States don't get paid sick days. So finally, Nancy Pelosi was pushing this law, this bill that would have created paid sick days for everyone. And then corporate America, despite it saying that we no longer are going to emphasize profit maximization, corporate America won a carve out so that companies with more than 500 employees still don't have to provide paid sick days despite the horrors of the coronavirus and the huge, transmissibility that it has, that it's spreading like wildfire.
The other thing is, and we're going to do a show about this, what about all of the immigrant workers? I'm thinking of immigrants working in restaurants and cafes. We'll do a show about farm workers, but But what about them, Adam, in terms of getting relief, especially people who are undocumented and working in restaurants and all other industries?
No, absolutely, Rose. And I think that right now with the big picture numbers, I think have started to firm up. The devil's really in the details with the economic package that's going to be coming out. So to your point, I think that those workers that are in cafes, that are frankly, you know, keeping our shelves stocked, that are making sure that we have food on our table, we're not exactly sure how this is going to work for them. And one thing that we would like to see at the Greenlining Institute is for the Federal Reserve to start buying more long-term municipal bonds so that cities have more money to support low-income workers and more cash to make sure that folks aren't being evicted and that folks have the resources they need.
Adam makes a good point. I was speaking to a professor friend at Rutgers in New Jersey yesterday, and she does a lot of work with undocumented workers. And she's very, very worried. You know, it will be hard for them to get unemployment insurance. You know, maybe many of them rely on food banks, but, you know, food banks will have a problem remaining in operation when you're trying to maintain social distance. So it's, you know, unfortunately going to be very, very tough for them, made tougher, of course, by a president who's so, you know, hugely hostile towards, undocumented workers. And I worry a lot for them. And you know, I see that there is some fundraising efforts arising over the past week or two to somehow get money to domestic workers and get money to undocumented workers who are going to have, you know, really the hardest time of anyone in the country right now.
Exactly. And I've received emails from some of the restaurants that I subscribe to, and they're launching GoFundMe campaigns. You know, there's a restaurant in Oakland, and they said, you know, we have 50 people work here. We're like a family, and everybody's out of work. And they're trying to raise $30,000, which isn't that much money for 50 people. But that's now what they're doing, is launching GoFundMe campaigns. We just got an email from a listener who forwarded a campaign from Unite Here. And this listener said, cash makes a bigger difference than tax relief for so many people. So at this point, Stephen, for people who are concerned about paying the bills next week, when do you think people can expect some kind of financial relief?
So, you know, the folks in Congress, the folks in Washington, and we've all learned not to believe everything the folks in Washington tell us. They say hopefully in 2 or 3 weeks, which, you know, if you have a hard time making ends meet week to week, you know, is still going to be tough. And, you know, I keep thinking, you know, of some of the biblical verses, you know, help strangers in a strange land, help the least among us. And unfortunately, as we were discussing, you know, undocumented workers, the poorest, they're going to have a very hard time right now when, you know, when Washington seems so focused on, you know, bailing out corporations. So hopefully whatever comes out of the Senate and the House will, you know, really have effective measures to try to speed aid to, you know, low-income workers, to the very neediest.
And we don't have time to take Mark's question, but thank you for calling, Mark. Adam, we have about a minute left. Mark says, it seems like this is an opportunity to restructure the U.S. economy.
I think absolutely. And I think the first thing, kind of going back to Stephen's earlier point, is we should really get rid of some of these ridiculous notions around the moral hazard debate around paid sick days. I think first and foremost, we need to immediately correct what I think is an outlier in the Western world, where the United States just doesn't support sick workers. So we need to do that. I think we'll see immediate health benefits, and we'll see immediate economic benefits from extending some of the most basic paid sick leave type programs that other wealthy nations already have. And I think that from Greenlining's perspective, what we want to do is reorient the economy to make sure that all people are benefiting from recovery. I think what we saw the last time around was that families who started with less recovered much more slowly. I think what we saw was communities of color, especially women of color, recovered from the financial crisis much more slowly. So what we want to make sure is that there's a just recovery from this crisis, because we will recover. And we want to make sure that the dollars that go out are really supporting the folks that need it and not corporations.
Adam Briones is Director of Economic Equity at the Greenlining Institute. They work to advance economic opportunities for people of color. Adam, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Stephen Greenhouse was a New York Times reporter for 31 years. He spent two decades covering labor. His latest book is Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Stephen, thank you for your work. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you
back. Thanks very much. Keep up the good work, Rose.
All right.
It's a difficult crisis, and you're helping shed light to move us all forward.
Likewise. Thank you so much for your work, Stephen. And if you have any show ideas, if you're a worker out there and you want us to get your story out, if you don't know how you're going to pay your bills and you want us to get your story out, we're also calling state and local officials to try to get them on the line to answer your pressing questions. Since April 1st is right around the corner, so anytime, please email us your call at kalw.org. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about how much it costs to actually get treated for COVID-19, especially for those of us who are underinsured and uninsured. How are officials going to deal with this? And then we are going to talk about what city and state officials are doing to protect people experiencing homelessness. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show and Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.